This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
That brings us to 7:09, and generally this is where we do our daily COVID-19 numbers wrap-up, but given that the ministry has now introduced a new website with more data, and they're more up-to-date really with the numbers there, we're slowly starting to phase that out. And essentially, if you want to check out today's numbers, you can head on over to covidnow.moh.gov.my. Those are updated daily and have a whole lot of granular data as well if you'd like to learn more. So moving on then to messages. It is 7:09. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Sharmila and Lynn. And before we move on to our next story, we're just going to look back at the messages that we've been getting about the various topics that we've been talking about today. So earlier on Inside Story, we were speaking about education, and more specifically the fact that schools are going to be reopening in phases. And one of the things that we touched on is really the challenges faced by the B40 community as schools reopen. And our guests specifically honed in on mental health as being one of the things that they need support on. And we do have this message in relation to that.
Yeah, so this messenger asked to remain anonymous and says, yes, I absolutely agree with the last speaker that the authorities must look into this issue of children's mental health. Although I've been listening to BFM's coverage about this issue, I didn't realise I was still not fully aware of the gravity of the situation out there until a recent conversation with my daughter revealed that one of her friend's family is actually going through this as well. The usually strict father had become abusive. One of the children had even attempted suicide because of this. And everyone in the family is tremendously stressed. Nothing is being done. I don't think advising my daughter's friend to call for outside help would work. After all, what can secondary school kids do? I feel so helpless and so upset for them. And I mean, this is horrible to hear, right? I think that whenever it is that we hear about or read stories involving abuse within the family, it's just horrific. I do think, though, just to pick up on one element of that, it is important to call for outside help, I think, for a number of reasons, partly because I think without that sort of external support, it can be very difficult to see a way out or to see any form of path towards actually reaching out for help or getting going on that. And I think hearing directly from experts, from people who are trained to handle these situations and who can therefore actually give options, you know, clear-cut options as to what can happen and what steps need to be taken in order for that to happen, that's a useful thing. So while perhaps, you know, it won't immediately solve the situation, I think it's an important step.
And I think that the relative isolation of the pandemic is one of the reasons why these things become so much more difficult, because you're not hearing from many people outside of your immediate day-to-day circle. If you are struggling with challenges like this, you know, a couple of numbers that you can call, Talian Kase 15999, or if you'd like help with difficult situations, you can call the Women's Aid Organization at 03-3000-888. Once again, Talian Kase 15999 and the Women's Aid Organization 03-3000-8858. Now, a little bit earlier, we were also speaking about today's parliamentary proceedings. It was the first day of debate, and we were asking you, what are some of the topics that you'd like to see discussed in Parliament? We have this from Patrick.
Patrick says, the vulnerable status of both legal and illegal migrant workers and refugees are glaring in the times of pandemic. I hope that Parliament will address the issue and work on relevant policies.
I think that's a great suggestion. I think it's a very important subject to talk about. And I too would like to see that brought up and discussed in Parliament.
Yeah, and I think What I wanted to highlight is to see it discussed in, I don't know, without the kinds of bias, I think, that usually permeate the discussion. Because generally speaking, whenever this issue comes up, not even in Parliament, just on the streets of Malaysia, just in Kopitiams, when we used to be able to go to Kopitiams, I think that there is always this push and pull between this idea of getting rid of, eradication of, you know, pushing people out and not necessarily accepting perhaps the role that they play in the first place. And also the fact that sure, you can try to address issues around borders and security and the like, but it doesn't necessarily take into account the people who are already here, already working.
I think that phrase that Patrick uses, the vulnerable status of migrant workers, is really the approach that should be taken when this issue, if this issue is discussed. Keep those thoughts coming on any of the topics that we're discussing today, really. You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Coming up after this, we'll be discussing a terror alert that has been issued by the Japanese Embassy in Kuala Lumpur. So keep it here on The Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Business, finance, and music. BFM 89.9.
It is coming up to 7:16. You're listening to The Evening Edition with Sharmila and Lynn. So yesterday, the Japanese Embassy in Kuala Lumpur confirmed that a warning has been issued to Japanese citizens here in Malaysia over a possible terrorist threat in Southeast Asia. So we're going to try and understand what that means.
Specifically, the warning cited intelligence reports saying there may be possible attacks on houses of worship, places of large gatherings, and this advisory was therefore to stay away from those places. And it was issued to citizens in Indonesia, the Philippines, Singapore, Thailand, Myanmar, and of course, Malaysia. So an official from the embassy told Bernama that it was done following an instruction from Tokyo. There wasn't really further information on that. And for the number of people who would have received this advisory, of course, now it's a headline. Everyone's read it. But initially, there are approximately 31,000 Japanese nationals who live in Malaysia.
So Wisma Putra has responded, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs specifically, and they said that our security agencies, particularly the police, are addressing the situation and that the Malaysian embassy in Tokyo has been advised to stay in close communication with the Japanese Foreign Ministry. However, today, Defence Minister Dato' Sri Hishamuddin Hussein told reporters that he will be liaising with Wisma Putra over this matter and that he's been briefed by our military intelligence. He also said that based on military intelligence as well as the IGP, that there's no cause for concern at this point in time of any real threat.
Yeah. And in fact, the Bukit Aman Special Branch Director of Communications, Datuk Zamriah here, said that it was a routine notice and there's not been any information on a possible terrorist threat in the country. And I think, you know, whenever it is that we talk about specifically technical terms and documents that emerge from the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in particular, not because the ministry is particularly guilty of this, simply because, and we've addressed this before, simply because I think ambassadorial language, diplomatic language tends to be words that we don't necessarily use, right, in day-to-day life. And so I think for me, what I'm curious about here is, A, of course, the issue of the threat, but also understanding a little bit more about what it means that it was a routine notice and what exactly an advisory encompasses.
And, you know, when you take that kind of language and put it on headlines, it sort of adds another layer of concern to people who are not quite sure what this might mean. So we're going to try and unpack exactly that. Do share your thoughts with us. You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We're now joined by Dr. Ahmad El Mohammadi, who is an associate fellow at the International Center for Counterterrorism. Dr. Ahmad, thank you for being with us today.
Yeah, thank you very much.
So looking first at the recent events, what do we know about what triggered this particular warning?
Well, I guess it's because of the several reasons. Number one, because of the recent anniversary of 9/11. And number two, because of the Taliban's takeover of Afghanistan and the celebratory moods by some militant group in Indonesia. So this event has taken place not in Malaysia, but in the region, basically. So I guess that what triggers the advisory warning by the Japanese embassies.
So what is the process for a terror alert advisory to be issued?
Yes, as far as I know, it is a routine practice by the foreign ministry, especially whenever we have, for example, Japan, they have a lot of their citizens in the region. They would monitor the event in the region from time to time, especially in the specific event like terrorism or pandemic or crime, because this kind of thing is issued because of the particular reason, for example, crime, terrorism, natural disaster, civil unrest, or whatever. So the assessment is made based on the region, not based on the specific country. And later on, they would issue a guideline because advisory, travel advisory is basically a general guideline, a safety guidelines for all their citizens living in the region, as not necessarily in Malaysia, but in the region, to be cautious. But they have actually four levels. They have, for example, blue, which is normal, yellow, it is cautious, and orange is increased cautious, and red is a very imminent threat.
You use the word routine. I'm curious about how common advisories like these are.
It is more common whenever the region is facing more threats. For example, in the Southeast Asian region, the most common threat would be terrorism threat, especially in Indonesia, in the Philippines, and sometimes in Malaysia, in Southern Thai, and so on. And other thing is because of the crime, for example, kidnappings, like in Sabah area, they done this from time to time. So whenever their citizen want to travel, for example, if you want to travel, let's say we want to travel to Afghanistan at the moment, our foreign ministry will issue a guideline that, okay, this country is not safe for you, is a red level, so it is better to avoid. So same goes to the United States. They do the same thing to their citizen, as well as the Japanese government. They're doing the same thing. But whenever it is published in the news, it become like a big issue because they thought that there is an imminent threat in this country. I think that, whereas in actuality, it refers to the one kind of celebratory mood in Indonesia done by the terrorist group resulting from the Taliban's takeover.
On that note then, might this advisory therefore have broader impact on how Malaysia is perceived, even if it is just, you know, sort of routine and par for the course, now that it's been reported so widely?
Absolutely. I think that's the reason why the Ministry of Defense, the Minister of Defense came up with a strong statement saying that it is baseless, which is true, because based on the current report by the police, but also by the military intelligence, there is no indicators, there is no threat presence in this country at the moment.
Now, speaking more broadly, what can you tell us about the current status of extremism in Malaysia and the region?
Well, I would say extremism remain, but sometimes it goes up, sometimes remain latent. It actually triggers whenever there is a situation in the region and also at the global level. And we also need to understand that extremism is not necessarily appear in the form of religious extremism, but also political extremism, social extremism, meaning that somebody, some group who are actually advocated certain extremist views, they have this view, but as long as it doesn't harm the public, they can keep it for themselves. But when it started to translate into society or in the form of action, that would be a threat to the national security.
How has the pandemic, with its lockdowns and so on, affected the movement and efforts of terrorist organizations?
Yeah. They can't move. They can't conduct an operation. And if they want to conduct an operation, what for? Because there is nobody to attack. There is nobody to target. Most public places are closed and there is no much movement on the street, and the key buildings, key installation, public places are all closed down. So there is no point of conducting an attack. And another thing is because of the, to carry out such kind of attack, we need to have certain type of materials and to move. And so lockdown actually make them very difficult. However, I don't deny that there would be a kind of attempt in the cyberspace, because they're going to use cyberspace. People are using cyberspace a lot. And people now talk about the cyber pandemic. We have the health pandemic. They are going to talk about the cyber pandemic now, because most things going on right now in the cyberspace.
So let's talk about the other side of that coin, right? How has the pandemic impacted efforts to detect or to arrest those that are involved in violent extremism?
Well, I would say the counterterrorism division, they would invest more to monitor and also to detect the online activities, Facebook and social medias. And they take a proactive measures, that is to prevent those people rather than, arrest them. So if they find out that there is somebody in the process of radicalization, they would approach and advise them not to proceed.
So with lockdowns and travel restrictions easing, is there a concern that there might be an uptick in terrorist activity?
Taking the cue from the our police and also the Minister of Minister of Defense, there is no indication yet that we have an imminent threat or there is an increase in the radicalization activities in cyberspace and also on offline. So we are now have our situation under control.
And what strategies or approaches would you like to see when it comes to countering terrorism in this region?
I would say you play a very important role to spread the news, to educate the news about this issue. I appreciate your efforts to discuss this issue. I think whenever the information reaches the public, I think this is one of the ways that we can and your department can do this to the public. And everybody actually can participate. And it is not the work of our authorities alone. It is the public efforts.
Dr. Ahmad, thank you for speaking with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That was Dr. Ahmad El Mohammadi, Associate Fellow at the International Center for Counterterrorism, speaking to us about an alert issued by the Japanese embassy regarding terror threats in the region. Keep those thoughts coming. You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Coming up after this, a change of pace. We're going to be throwing back to Who Framed Roger Rabbit from 1988. So that should be something loony to cap your evening off. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.